the story of stuff. We have so much of it. After a while, your stuff can end up running your life. Good morning and welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Steve Heimel. So what's the answer for too much stuff? Simplify? Or is it not that simple? Our statewide phone number, 1-800-478-8255. 478-TALK, a local call in Anchorage of 550-8422, email talk@alaskapublic.org. Annie Leonard, the author of The Story of Stuff, The Story of Broke, The Story of Citizens United, is our guest today on Talk of Alaska Statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by
Providence Imaging Center with Drs. Scott Nespinski and Christopher Reed, providing interpretations of imaging studies with a focus on musculoskeletal radiology. provimaging.com.
Increasing energy efficiency is an easy way to reduce energy consumption and save money. The Alaska Housing Finance Corporation now offers financing to publicly owned facilities to make improvements to increase energy efficiency. Find out more about how their loan program works and if there are public buildings in your community that are a good fit for the Alaska Energy Efficiency Revolving Loan Program at ahfc.us. This message sponsored by AHFC.
The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
Late January, early February is the sweet spot for the kind of talk radio that I do. Part of it is because every year in February, I go to the American Association for the Advancement of Science and I load my brain up with the latest breakthrough science. And part of it is that a new year has started, and I just start a whole new agenda for the show. Sometimes we'll do it the first show of the month, and we'll just keep doing the show on the same theme because that's what people wanted to talk about. Like, we talked about food security for weeks and weeks in a row. We've talked about the rig, the colic, a couple of weeks in a row because that's what people wanted to talk about. And I think we went for more than a month when we just opened it up to energy, and we talked about energy. So it's fun to talk with Alaskans at this time of a year when it's a reflective time of year. But also, the Marine Science Symposium always happens in January, and that is unpublished breakthrough science, but it hasn't been published yet. It's just the raw results are announced. So that is an absolute field day for a journalist that likes science. And then, shortly thereafter, is the Alaska Forum on the Environment, which is an odd concatenation of regulators, environmental groups, and industry all coming together to one big meeting. And it's the brainchild, I guess you would say, of Kurt Ilo, who runs an organization called the Alaska Forum. So, Kurt, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Good morning, Steve.
So tell me a little bit. We're going to get to our guest, who's the speaker, because that's what makes Alaska Forum a highlight for me, is you bring in fabulous speakers, and Annie Leonard's going to be, I'm sure, just another great one. But before we even say hi to her, I just want to set the stage for she's a keynote speaker, right?
Right. We have over 10 keynote events this year, and Annie is our noontime keynote speaker on Monday. So we're quite excited to have Annie come up and visit us this week.
And the main thing is that you have concurrent sessions, some of them very technical, about all the different environmental issues, basically.
Yeah. And each year we provide about 140 sessions, breakout sessions. They're all technical in nature on current issues, and they can be anything from this year's focus, which is a lot on coastal issues and marine debris, but we always have content on simple things like solid waste and energy issues and sanitation issues and the full gamut of environmental issues we cover during that week-long event.
And then you basically get your funding then from a variety of sources.
Yeah.
Primarily the people that pay at the gate.
Mostly it's through registrations, people who come and want to learn more about the environment. They want to develop their own professional careers and skills, and they come to learn more about the perspective of others.
Yeah. And so, for instance, there's always a lot of EPA people there.
Absolutely, a lot of EPA, and actually more than half of our audience is coming from rural Alaska, and those folks are just an amazing part of the event. They bring in their cultural aspects of the event, but as well, they're the most dedicated. They come in, and first thing in the morning, they're there, and they stay till late, and just their level of effort is really wonderful to watch.
And of course, they have the biggest and most immediate challenges often.
Oh, absolutely. Certainly in areas of sanitation and solid waste and energy, health, across the board.
Yeah. So here we sit in Alaska, and here is Annie Leonard, of the author of The Story of Stuff, and has a website for The Story of Stuff. It's going to come up from Berkeley. First visit to Alaska, and we'll first visit with her by telephone at her office in Berkeley. Annie, welcome to Talk of Alaska. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me.
So the weather's been a little severe here. We've been hitting sub-zero, so I hope you have warm stuff.
I don't even think anyone in California owns anything for sub-zero. I'm going to have to do some borrowing.
Fortunately, Alaskans, almost any Alaskan, if they've been up here any length of time, has a kind of a warehouse full of what we call gear. I'm not going to call it stuff, because this is stuff we really use, you know, that you need. You know, you can't seem to have enough. I personally could stand to have about four different bicycles. I only have one, but I could stand to have four. And there's foot gear for all the different types of weather conditions that we have. Right now I've got my Steiger Mukluks on. I won't even tell you what the price tag on these things, but they're fine down to 30 below. then there's your heavy parka and your various layers that you can build up to your shell. And then there's your locomotion methods, which might be combustion or perhaps human powered. You certainly would want snowshoes from time to time, and skis, maybe a couple kinds of skis, as a matter of fact. And on it goes. And I'm not even talking about having a skiff and getting out on the water. This is Alaska, but you go out to a rural place in Alaska, and it looks like there's garbage all over people's front yards, but it's not. That's a materials yard.
Well, that sounds like a community that is really ripe for sharing, because there's no need for everybody to own all this stuff. Is there much of a culture of sharing up there?
It's just beginning. I think one thing that happens is small populations sometimes can't support something that a larger population can. So for that reason, we haven't, in Anchorage, where we have, 300,000 people, we don't really, we don't have a rideshare program right now. Mm. It seems weird. It seems that, you know, we should have a situation where we don't need quite so many vehicles because people could share the vehicles, but the logistics of the, you know, the garage, the insurance carriers and all that sort of thing, haven't, you know, they make it a little harder to pull some of these things off. And the long supply lines, of course, also.
Right. You know where I live here in my town, the public library has a tool lending library. So anyone with a library card, which anyone can get for free, you can borrow a power drill, a jackhammer, whatever you need. You know, the average power drill that homeowners have is used for 15 minutes in its whole life. And so with this kind of sharing infrastructure, it allows us all to have access to what we need without having to take on the responsibility of ownership. So that'd be something cool to explore.
What a fabulous idea. Well, I want to, Annie Leonard, I want to get you to talk a little bit about your, you know, you just kicked an idea that could run a whole talk show, really, about things that we could have in our libraries that we really could use besides books. Because even now, I think it's more computers than books if you go in there and watch. People are looking at tubes and plunking away on keyboards like crazy in our libraries these days. But the idea of having a belt sander in there, you know, I think that's a great idea.
We love our tool lending library. And then the people who work there, they know how to use this stuff. They give you all this advice. And so I haven't bought a tool in 10 years.
That's incredible. So our telephone number is 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK. The floor is open for your ideas of how we can cut down on stuff. If you're calling from Anchorage, it's a local call at 550-8422. Email is talk@alaskapublic.org. And Annie, tell me the story of The Story of Stuff. Well, how did you get into this business?
You know, I started getting really interested in stuff when I went to college in New York City, and there were literally shoulder-high piles of garbage everywhere. And I mean, they're still there, too. It's incredible how much garbage it is. I got so curious about what is in all these bags and where did it come from and where it's going. You know, that's where I picked up my habit, which is sometimes embarrassing, but I'm going to do it when I come to Anchorage, is I look in the garbage wherever I go, because you can really find out a lot about a society if you look at how the materials are moving around. So I just got real interested in how stuff moves through our society, where it comes from, where it goes, what impacts it has along the way. I ended up studying that in school and then fortunately getting a job at an international environmental organization working on these issues. So over the course of a decade, I went to 40 countries and visited the factories where our stuff is made and the dumps where our stuff is dumped. And it was a fascinating way to spend a decade. I cannot now look at something, whether it's a car, a cell phone, a pair of shoes, a sweatshirt, and not think about where did it come from, what's it made out of, who made it, how did it get to me, what chemicals are in it that aren't labeled. You know, I just can't stop thinking about this. And what I learned in that decade is that all this stuff in our lives has a sort of hidden life out of view, out of sight and out of mind. You know, it's causing environmental and health and economic and even social problems that we don't see. And I also learned that there is an infinite number of solutions. We could be doing this so much better. So I'm really on a mission to change how we make and use and throw away stuff to make it safer, healthier, more sustainable, and more fair. And it's fun because it's such a fascinating issue. And it's also fun because there are solutions available. As I said, we could do it so much better. So the story of Stuff is a film. It's a 20-minute film online. Anyone can watch it, storyofstuff.org, that summarizes what I saw in that decade traveling around looking at factories and dumps. The response was so huge that I ended up making 7 more films, writing a book, and have a whole bunch of curriculums and information on the website. And I encourage your listeners to check it out and join me in thinking about where all our stuff comes from and where it goes.
I remember maybe you were even involved with this some years ago, that the World Watch Institute put out one of their little studies, monographs, I guess they called them, on how things are recycled in the third world. And it was a complete eye-opener about how the rendering of what we would consider garbage back into useful things, and the things that people figure out how to make when they're really poor and they're just picking through the trash.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I have tracked a bunch of waste exports from the U.S. and Europe to third world countries to see what's happening. And sometimes the recycling can happen in a clean and safe way. If that's the case, I say, why not keep it at home? We need the jobs here. Why ship this stuff halfway around the planet to China and then reprocess it and giving people jobs and then ship it all the way back? It doesn't really make sense. We got to keep those jobs at home. But sadly, a lot of the recycling, the reason it's being shipped over to China is it's dirty and it's not safe. And so things like our e-waste. E-waste refers to all the electronics that we are, you know, racing through in our society, the cell phones, the gadgets, the tablets, the televisions, you know, all these things that we buy and throw away so fast because they keep getting upgraded. E-waste is the fastest growing part of our municipal waste stream and the most hazardous.
And the refinement, the recycling technique seems to be lacking quite a bit in this for some reason. I mean, it appears to me that it's often has to be done by hand. There's toxic, very small amounts of very toxic things and small amounts of very valuable things that have to be in some way separated and re-rendered.
Absolutely. And because of the presence of the toxics and the dangerous stuff, we need to be keeping these jobs here and doing them under close supervision, rather than sending them to places like China or different countries in Africa, where I've seen literally people with no protective gear smashing open computer monitors, literally with a hammer, the toxic stuff exposed everywhere, just putting a lot of the unwanted material, which includes a lot of the toxics, in a pile and just lighting it on fire. I mean, it is nasty just to pull out the little bits of valuable materials. So what we need to do is encourage the producers of these items to design them without the toxics is the first thing, so that they are safe to recycle. And then we need to make sure that they are recycled safely.
Okay, now, here's the question, Annie. How do you get the market to do this?
Well, this is an all hands on deck situation. There are so many different ways that we can engage to do this. There's a piece that we can do as individuals. When we are making our purchasing decisions, choose the most safe, most healthy product that's available. We can write to the companies. We can protest. There's been a lot of protests in front of the Apple headquarters. I live right near Silicon Valley where all these high-tech companies are. There's been a lot of protests there of people saying, make the iPhone safe, make it healthy, make it last. We don't want Chinese workers poisoned to make this stuff and then to deal with it at the end of its life. So you can do all kinds of what we call market campaigns to get the company to change. You can also ask our government for better regulations. The European Union has passed a law that covers the entire European Union, every single thing that plugs in. It's actually two laws, the Restriction on Hazardous Substances, or also called the ROSE Directive, and the WEEE Directive, which is waste from electronics and electrical equipment. Excuse me. These two laws require that anything that plugs in be free of lead, cadmium, mercury, hexavalent chromium, flame retardants, a whole set of really toxic chemicals, but the same companies are allowed to still use those chemicals here. So if Dell and Sony and Panasonic and Apple and all these guys can make the stuff without the toxic chemicals in Europe, then we in the U.S. need to say, why not here? We want the same practices and the same laws. It's absolutely possible.
Yeah, it seems that lots of times the regulation is less than it seems, though. Like we have one right now with regards to sustainable fisheries, where the salmon fishery is a fairly nice, clean fishery, has decided not to pay for Marine Stewardship Council certification because it doesn't really help their product all that much, and it costs them so much to do it. And then we have the environmentally questionable factory trawler industry, which is happy to pay, and McDonald's is paying for Marine Stewardship Council certification for their product. And then you have now these other organizations who say, well, we have better and more sustainable certifying procedures. And you know, in Europe, people really pay attention to this. In some of these foreign markets, you really have to be careful what kind of label you're going to have on your product, because people really pay attention to this stuff. And in the United States, it doesn't seem to be that way. It just seems that our congressional process is such that they always put a lot of loopholes in any farm bill or whatever that's said, okay, this is what organic is going to be, and it's not really what we think organic is at all. It's passing certain standards, and it's actually sometimes doing almost the opposite of what you think it's doing. And it's really, it creates a confusion of labeling, Annie.
Confusion of labeling is absolutely right. You know, for a long time, people who were concerned about health and the environment focused on a strategy of giving consumers information, assuming that that would shift people's purchasing habits and then send market signals up the supply chain. But, you know, it just hasn't worked. There's a confusion of labels. There's a mistrust. There's a lot of, you know, greenwashing, what we call making a product look green with the green packaging, even if it's not. And there's also a lot of factors that influencing our purchasing besides information. We purchase what our mothers purchased. We purchase what our friends are purchasing. We purchase what had a cool advertisement with some cool celebrity on it. So information alone has not been a major driver in shifting production techniques. So what I'm not a big fan of these voluntary label things. What I really want is tougher policies. Rather than have the toxics labeled or have the environmentally unsustainable label and hope that that little logo makes it through into the consumer's mind, what I'd rather say is you're not allowed to put toxics in chemical in products that we put in our bodies. You're not allowed to fish in a way that undermines the integrity of the ecosystem to provide for next year. I just want to have higher standards across the board. Otherwise, the companies that are doing the right thing are getting penalized. They have to go out of their way to do the right thing. We need to change the rules so that you have to go out of your way to do the wrong thing. Let's reward those companies that do want to be part of the solution.
Oh, them's fighting words, Annie. I can tell you right now, them's fighting words. Let's go to Tiffany, joins the program from Wasilla. Tiffany, welcome.
Hi there.
Welcome to Talk Alaska with Annie Leonard and Kurt Ilo.
Thank you. This is just one of those topics that's so staggering. I can't tell if it's super depressing or super inspiring.
It's inspiring because there's so many solutions.
Annie's big on that.
Go ahead.
Annie's big on the inspiring side of it.
And I agree. And in the time I've been listening, you've gone off on really like an interesting bent, because I was thinking, first of all, just as a mother, I think a lot of this is a problem of affluence. I mean, I have children, and I've purchased I don't know how many different plastic devices to hold the child, a swing, a car seat, all these things that are mandated, and sometimes those regulations create more excess. Why does my car seat have to go away after 18 months?
Yeah,
those
that's...
things expire, you know, so...
And some of that, it seems to me, you know, I don't know, but as a grandparent, I'll say, appears to be an artifact of design. They actually could design these to meet specs better, but they're kind of putting a planned obsolescence in, like has been known to happen with the automotive industry.
Right, and with our household appliances, I'm looking at a 20-year-old oven that works just fine, but I know if it were 5 years old, it probably would have been.
I don't know. Do you know about the car seats, Annie? Whether there's some situation with car seats where you could get like an adjustable car seat that you didn't have to replace every year or two?
Well, I know that car seats have a particular safety issue that some people discourage sharing. You don't want to buy a used one on Craigslist or Goodwill because you don't know if it's been in an accident. But, you know, if your car seat has not been in an accident, and you know that because you've owned it its whole life, it is fine to share it. I mean, if you talk about one sector of goods in which we need more sharing, it is kids' stuff. Otherwise, your house will be just knee-deep in crap within a couple of years because the grandparents are sending all this stuff, you're buying all this stuff. I mean, once you have kids, your life is a constant battle against drowning in stuff. So what we did in my community is we set up a sharing network. So on the first day of every month, we filled up a grocery sack full of toys and devices, and we sent it to the next kid, and then we got a new grocery sack. So it's all new stuff, exciting, and then it keeps going around. So in about 6 months, our original stuff, whatever still exists, comes back to us. That is a great way to keep your kids engaged with different kinds of toys or whatever, but not just keep buying ever more stuff. We share strollers, car seats, all kinds of stuff. And one of the best things about sharing, not only does it mean we're using less resources and creating less waste, not only is it good for our pocketbooks because we're not buying all this stuff, but you got to talk to each other to share. So it also builds community. And that is one of the best antidotes to more and more stuff.
Tiffany.
I agree. And we traveled to Australia and we went to a toy library, which makes so much sense. It's so logical. And I've had times when we accidentally put toys into storage and they didn't come out for 18 months. And the children are thrilled. It's so much fun.
Well, you know, they got
to... Try having a monthly toy swap or something. Yeah. That's a really fun thing to do. Bring a bag of toys, leave with a bag of toys.
They have an interesting situation in Sitka where they have a secondhand store called the White Elephant. And, you know, stuff has gone through the White Elephant like 5 or 6 times, you know.
I think island living helps, truly. I'm from Southeast Alaska. Yeah. There's a way to do it, but I think it hinges on American affluence. This excess, when you read about people before Tide was invented, people owned 10 garments. No one has 10 garments now unless they're very conscientious.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, great topic.
All right, Tiffany, thanks for your call.
Thank you.
Just call on back if you got more. It's 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK. 550-8422, a local call in Anchorage, and email is talk@alaskapublic.org. And we got one right now from Michael who says, if you, APRN, as well as Steve Heimel and Annie Leonard, are so against stuff, set an example for the rest of us. Move out of your home. Live outside with nature. Get rid of your cell phone, radio, TV, and computer. Dismantle your radio towers, radio stations, and video production facilities. OMG. Stop encouraging others to buy stuff to hear or see you. Stop using cars, airplanes, and restaurants. Don't repaint your house or apartment. Oh, sorry, you moved out of your home already, didn't you? Above all, stop drinking that bottled water or going to the grocery store. Compost all your human waste in the garden where you grow everything you ever eat. Never read a book, don't watch TV, or listen to the radio or iPod. If you do all the above, then I'll believe you are sincere. Only then will I reduce my own use of the items listed above. Wow, there's some ideology there.
That makes me sad. I guess he missed the critical thinking class in school, huh? What I have to say to that is that I am not against stuff at all. In fact, I want us to appreciate our stuff more. In many ways, I'm pro-stuff. The stuff that I am against is that stuff which is trashing the planet, which is poisoning people, and the stuff with which we confuse our sense of self-worth. Those are the stuff that I'm worried about. But in terms of other kinds of stuff, when I say I'm pro-stuff, I want us to appreciate and care for and have reverence of our stuff. I want us to look at our bicycle or our cell phone and think, someone mined these metals. Someone worked in this smelter. Someone shaped this and designed it and packaged it and sent it to me. Have a little more appreciation. So take care of our stuff. You know, bring your bike in from the rain. Get your shoes resold. If we had more appreciation for the stuff we had, we would use less of it. It's the mindless buying, using, chucking, mindless using, chucking. That's the kinds of consumption that I'm worried about. But I am in no way recommending that we all live in yurts and, you know, wear sandals all year round. It's just, it's all about balance and making sure that the stuff we have is healthy for the planet, healthy for us emotionally as well as physical health, you know, and healthy for our communities. We should be using stuff as a vehicle to be healthy and happy, but too often our stuff is now getting in our own way, and our stuff is undermining our health and happiness, and that's when we need to stop and go, wait a minute, what's more important, having leisure time, having good health, having time with my kids, or always having the latest Apple gadget? We've just gotten out of balance here.
Well, yeah, you know, now you're getting to this this business of the engineering of demand, expanding your market through advertising, and of course we saw this after the Second World War. Generally, a war is followed by a depression, and the Second World War instead was followed by prosperity, as they called it. They were built Levittown. The cars got bigger and nicer, and you know, there was rationing after the war, and then it gradually went away, and people were so happy to be able to get butter. You know, they had been deprived of all these things, and then they could get them, and then the advertising kicked in to continue to build the demand for these things and fuel economic growth. And there it is, Annie. Economic growth. Economic growth is jobs. Where's the jobs in no growth?
That's absolutely right. After our economy was inflated during the war, when the war ended, our economic planners said, how can we keep our economy going at this hypermanic inflated rate? And they realized it's not going to be by continuing World War II, but it's going to be by getting people to buy a new toaster every year, by getting people to own 3 swimsuits and 2 cars, and you
right.
know, getting
I was there,
having us buy more and more.
I was there. You know, Veblen's book, which came up with this term conspicuous consumption, came mm-hmm. out at the turn of the century, not this one, the one before. Mm-hmm. It's been going all that long. I mean, it really, you talk to people, it kind of, they say, well, it sort of started in the 20s, really.
Right. Well, we need to ask ourselves, growth of what? Do we just want blind economic growth like any monetary transactions? Do we want growth of prisons or growth of schools? Do we want growth of energy facilities that are destroying the climate or growth of clean, healthy energies? Do we want, you know, growth of more highways to nowhere or growth of healthy development? So we need to just be a little more critical in how we think about economic activity and make sure that economic activity is serving the deeper goals of happy, healthy communities. Economic activity is sort of like a hammer. You can build something with it or wreck something with it. We might as well be building something.
So me and a few granola crunchers go to the assembly and stomp our feet for a more urban planning for our city, so that we have bike lanes that we can actually use, and we're completely outvoted, Annie. Stamping your feet don't always do it. I mean, people, you know, there's always some sorehead that shows up at the annual meeting of the corporation. Exxon always has them, right? And they say, I have, you know, 4,000 shareholders, and here's my resolution. You must reduce your, you know, and they just, security hauls them out after a certain point.
Well, you know, we're talking about long-term movement building here, is that our society has gotten so off track. I mean, we have become so consumer frenzied and just so off track that we need to really settle down and create a different set of social norms. We need to value people not based on the products they own, but on who they are in the community, how they show up in the world. We need to push our companies to make stuff more cleanly and safely. This is a long-term change. Unfortunately, we're not going to do this just at our next city council meetings. So let's talk about how to incorporate environmental values and a sense of sufficiency in our education, in our faith-based communities, in our own neighborhoods. You know, this is a long haul change. So I understand feeling marginalized, and sometimes we don't win with our battles. But if we just keep working on this, what's at stake here is the fate of the planet, the ability of the planet to support life. There is no greater thing for which to fight than to be able to continue to live on this planet. So I'm going to keep going back to those city council meetings, even if I get thrown out time and time again. I'm going to keep working on this, and I invite all your listeners to join me because it really is the battle of our lifetime.
Keynote speaker at the Alaska Forum on the Environment, Annie Leonard, is our guest on Talk of Alaska, along with the head of the Alaska Forum, Kurt Ilo, and we'll be back as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from ConocoPhillips. The easy oil is gone, and getting to the remaining oil will be a challenge that will require the state and the industry to work together. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. The Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority was created by the Alaska State Legislature to develop, stimulate, and advance the economic welfare of the state and further the development of public transportation systems. The authority has completed required environmental work to date, and the Federal Highway Administration has given its approval needed to move forward. There's more information at KinnickArmBridge.com. This message sponsored by the Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority.
Okay, we got this one from Larry. Thanks for bringing this subject up. I use FreeCycle to borrow things I need and then FreeCycle them back out to the next person who wants it. FreeCycle. This works for things that are not so time critical because sometimes I have to wait to get one. The tool lending library would be opposed, I think, by the tool rental places around town. How do you overcome resistance from the business community? Hey, there's one for Kurt Ilo and Annie Leonard.
Kurt, you want to go first?
Overcoming the resistance, the community, and government business is one thing I think we can do through effective dialogue. Where we're discussing issues openly, we can see where there's concerns and voice them better. And it's not so much that you can build consensus.
In this case, you say we want a tool lending library. It's not like you want to put the rental place out of business.
I think you'd have to do that in cooperation with them somehow, and maybe there's a way you could partner together to do
it.
When you open up the dialogue, you'll see other additional possibilities you really hadn't thought of in such a good idea as a lending library.
Yeah, I have watched these rental places operate, and the margin is pretty small. The stuff gets damaged a lot, and the employees aren't always as well qualified as they could be because they're not paid that much. It's kind of a marginal business, really.
And I think if you engage those businesses, you'll see that there's complexities in the management of the tools, the maintenance, and the overhead. And you're starting to see things in a bigger picture, how complex that effort would be. So I think you'd gain more from the partnership of working with those vendors and finding a way to do it that works and meets for everyone.
Annie?
I agree, absolutely. You know, I find that more and more businesses realize that there is no business on a dead planet, and it's in everybody's interest to figure out ways to operate healthy, thriving, profitable businesses within the limits of the planet. And so there could be things like maybe the tool lending library has classes offered by the business, the tool rental place, and you can sign up to pay for the classes. They could make money there. You could also continue to rent the really big items, but I don't know a lot of places that rent things like hammers and, you know, little home power drills. There's probably not enough money in that, so maybe the smaller things can go in the public tool lending library. It seems like there's a lot of places to work together if we are all on the same page, which is we want a healthy economy and a healthy environment.
Let's go to Steve, joins the program from Sitka. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Steve.
Hi, thank you for the subject that you're on today. I'd like to echo the letter that you just read, the email about FreeCycle, with some details on how to do that.
Is this a website?
Cycle, and the real advantage to that is that you can ask for things that you need to. I need a crib, or you can get rid of things that our local white elephant shop won't take, like chickens or refrigerators or freezers.
They won't take chickens?
No, they won't. Nor televisions, nor computers, nor freezers. And so Sitka FreeCycle, before you actually tip it into the dumpster, you can post it on FreeCycle, and it's put into all of the people who are in the FreeCycle Yahoo group's inbox of their emails.
So it's kind of like Craigslist. It's another great use of electronic media, social media, and so forth.
Precisely.
I'm
and
a
it
huge
really
fan.
Well. Anything that I've said that I needed, it popped up. Somebody called me or emailed me immediately. Another thing that we have here that's really useful, and that is recycling building materials, both used building materials, or if you have a handful of extra boxes or lamps or whatever when you're building a place, there's always excess inventory, and they sell these things at a very reasonable price. But rather than just tossing them, they get put into other places.
Even in Sitka. I know in Anchorage, years ago, before I even got here in 1982, Michael O'Callaghan come up with this notion of just what you were talking about, Annie. What's just all the stuff in the dump? Do we really need to have all this stuff in the dump? At the time, the dump was right in town. It's right where our General Aviation Airport is now. And it's still outgassing methane, by the way, and also, what do you call it? The stuff that leachate. Yeah, it's making leachate. But he would go to the dump and he'd see all these truckloads after truckloads after truckloads of perfectly fine lumber just being dumped there. And he realized, and you can actually do the numbers on this, that so much of what is dumped is construction materials. And much of it is perfectly usable. And so he just said, well, let's just get a crew together. We'll pull the nails out of these things and stack them up and let people take them away. It'll work great.
Is he doing that?
He retired. Ah. What I found is that the recycling, it takes a real enthusiast to have a successful recycling venture in Alaska, probably because of the economies of scale and so forth. And they'll burn out and run out of energy after 3 or 4 years frequently.
It certainly seems to take... Take a person that has a lot of passion to carry those projects forward in Alaska.
Passion, exactly.
They have to stay engaged. And then, of course, when you try to do a project like that, recycling at the front end of a landfill process, there's liability concerns, and the landfill operators don't want you at the face of a landfill. But in a smaller community, even in Anchorage, sometimes it's more possible. I have a friend who built a cabin on a remote island in Alaska entirely out of things that they found in the landfill in their local community.
Whoa. Okay, let's go to Tiffany, joins the program. From Wasilla again. The same Tiffany, the car seat Tiffany?
Oh, no, that's a moniker, yes.
How you doing?
I'm very good, thank you. I have more thoughts. Thank you for humoring me here.
Yes.
On the car seat topic, actually, it should be noted that it's fine to pass car seats around, and I certainly am an advocate of that and do it, but good luck leaving a hospital with your newborn if you don't have a car seat that was manufactured when they say it should be.
Ooh.
So there's that consideration. But I'm thinking that I really like the strain of challenging norms, you know, this like stewardship ethos that I believe exists in about 4% of the population. There will always be this wide middle swath that buys the things they see on TV and is led a lot kind of by mindless consumption rather than conspicuous.
But, you know, Tiffany, I mean, even what you call TV has changed. I mean, I've watched it, you know, it's not the simple marketing demographic it once was with mass media. I've thought about this a lot because I got 50 years in the broadcasting industry, and when I started, our job, all of us, was to get as much rating as possible. We wanted to talk to everybody. And there's no medium left that wants to talk to everybody anymore. Maybe skywriting.
There's not one channel to the people. So I like the theme here sort of starting so grassroots and talking to the people around you in immediate daily activity. You know, we used the Waldorf School in Anchorage for a time, and they have a lovely policy at the beginning of the school year. They say, do not buy new school supplies if you don't need them. Come with your crayons from last year.
Very Rudolf Steiner.
Small level. That's very encouraging to people because I think the production will always be responsive to the market, right?
Yeah.
I wanted to hear, I liked the trailer to your show when you talked about manufacturing that demand. So I'm curious if that's a theme in Annie's book.
Annie?
Yeah, I talk about it in the book and also in the films. If you go to storyofstuff.org, there's a button there that says movies. The original one is The Story of Stuff, and then there are a number of other ones. The one that looks at bottled water especially looks at manufactured demand. You know, how companies got us to pay 2,000 times more for something that we could get for pennies from the kitchen sink.
You got a lot of attraction on that one, didn't you?
Huge, all over the world. I just learned that the Chinese version has been watched over a million times. That's one of our most popular ones, is The Story of Bottled Water. Check out all those films, and they examine these issues in a very fun and engaging way.
Oh, look at that. To me, that debunks most of the environmental movement.
Now, you also mentioned
the planet, cool, they wouldn't be buying bottled water, period.
Well, not a lot of environmentalists I know buy bottled water. I mean, you got to really be a loser to buy bottled water at this
point. Whoa! Fighting words again!
I don't know that message is getting to the people. That I believe there are people who are diehard, you know, but I think it's such a negligible portion of the population. This has to come out of not a devotion to the planet, but you can have stewardship to the planet because you value other humans. I think it has to be tied into an ethos that's real, a faith community, I guess is the word.
I used to feel like we people who cared about the planet, which, first of all, isn't that crazy to say we who care about the planet as though the planet is an optional thing? Nonetheless, I used to feel that we who care about the planet was a small minority. I don't feel that way anymore, partly because of the response to The Story of Stuff. I put this 20-minute cartoon up on the internet. I got, in the first year, 250,000 emails from people all over the country that said, I agree, I want to help. It's now been seen 36 million times around the world. The positive response was incredible. And so then I started looking into the data. And if you look at the surveys, most people actually share these values. 74% of people in the United States want more strict regulation on toxic chemicals and products. 83% want more investment in clean energy. 85% think that corporations have too much influence in our democracy. Like, if you talk about the core values, most people want their babies born without toxic chemicals already in their blood. Most people want to be able to drink their water. We are most people. What we need to do is learn how to talk about it in a way that taps into those shared values rather than just ranting, and then figure out what are we going to do about it. We need to help move the majority of people from sharing a sort of vague concern to actually taking action for solutions, and that's where the real potential for change is. But I think actually most people do agree with us. Not that many people don't care if their drinking water has toxic waste in it. That's a small minority, not the people who care about the planet. We're not a small minority. We are most people.
Tiffany?
Well, I just don't see how it translates into the bottled water being sold on a smaller level. I don't know if it's reduced. I mean,
bottled water
I just think it's a perfect example of how most people are not operating on a conscientious level when they're buying. I think the majority of people are responding to, like, monkey brain, and they're thirsty, so they buy water. Like, they won't wait 7 minutes to walk to a faucet.
Bottled water sales are decreasing, but I also agree that most people are not bringing their full consciousness to their purchasing habits, and that's because of what I talked about briefly before. There are so many things that influence our purchasing habits, from the 3,000 commercial messages we're told every day. Imagine if we were targeted with 3,000 messages about be nice to each other and take care of the planet. We'd have a very different kind of society. So
well,
there's
some
the commercial messages.
Right, but that starts
habit.
At the family level. I don't know that if you can. I mean, just the tool rental idea, I feel like an insurance company would kill that in a nanosecond. Someone will be injured. You can't have volunteer arborists making our cities beautiful because someone will cut themselves. I mean, you have to have a collective value. And I think the aim is the same of, like, two fringe communities. I just don't know where they merge in the middle to affect, you know, the larger whole. So we do have to be satisfied by imparting our own values to our own children sometimes.
our children, and then our neighbors, and then our fellow church congregationists, and then our coworkers, and you know, new ideas spread by talking about them and living them and demonstrating them. And so it starts with you, but then it goes out as a ripple effect.
Certainly. Yeah, that's logical.
All right. Thank you, Tiffany. I'm so glad you called back. I really, really enjoyed that exchange.
Oh, you guys are great sports. Thank you.
Yeah. This one from Bruce. Hi, Annie. It seems to me we've foregone the use of high-quality, long-lasting stuff for quantities of crappy stuff. I think we all agree about that, Bruce.
Right, so that, you know, what I find that the most forward-thinking businesses now are getting out of this making tons of crappy, short-lived stuff and figuring out how could they have a different kind of business model. Because they want to continue to thrive, which is fair enough. That's what businesses should do. But how can we have a different model? One of the things that's really inspiring me on this side is the idea of leasing products rather than having your revenue come from just constantly buying and replacing them. So, for example, there's a big carpet manufacturer who makes commercial carpets, and they realized that most people don't actually want to own the carpet. They need the commercial carpet in their offices, in their auditoriums, in their schools, whatever, for the services it provides. So instead of making low-quality carpet that has to be ripped out and replaced every 2 years, why not make really, really high-quality carpet and then lease it? So that you're paying a monthly fee, like Xerox machines do. Imagine if your cell phone company did that, if your power lawnmower company did that. Then there would be a built-in incentive to make stuff last as long as possible and need the fewest repairs. It's a totally different model than just the selling and replacing stuff. And the real businesses that are going to succeed in the century ahead are those that are thinking out of the box like that.
Wow. Dave in Bethel.
Good morning, Steve. Thank you for your show. Stuff in Bethel, we turn into a form of survival skills. For example, in the summertime, when all the barges come in, every scrap of wood is collected and burned to heat our houses. Perhaps we pollute the air a little bit there. In the wintertime, cargo plane after cargo plane comes in with dunnage, pallet boards. There's a large number of people that collect all that wood, every scrap, even small pieces, to heat our homes. Some of us in rural Alaska, for example, Bethel, cost of heating fuel is twice what it costs people in Anchorage. Gasoline is twice the price. The further you go out, the more gasoline costs the further you go out in the smaller communities. Many people only live in a portion of their houses in the wintertime because they cannot afford to heat the total house. That includes me. I live in about 25% of my home. We turn it into survival skills, and we hope we do not pollute. If any wood comes in treated, we use that for building foundations. Our high cost of living, we have to do whatever we can to survive. So we turn what people throw away, we use it to help us survive in rural Alaska. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you very, very much for standing on your 2 feet there and talking to us, Dave, as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from BP, supporting public broadcasting in Alaska. An artist is a person who expresses themselves creatively through words, images, sounds, materials, or original performance. If you are an artist, you might be eligible for funding to support your creative work. March 1st is the deadline to apply for an individual artist award. Visit Rasmussen Foundation on Facebook or on the web at rasmussen.org for more information. This message sponsored by Rasmussen Foundation.
Email coming in from Steven says, Annie is an inspiration. I stay home with my four-year-old, try to live simply, save money, live sustainably, have fun. We all get to choose how we spend our time and money. Businesses come and go in a free market. No one's trying to save typewriter companies. We're all free not to consume. Thanks for all your great ideas. And more simply from Bob, who says, Annie Leonard is an American hero. Let her talk. Well, you will be here for the Alaska Forum, which starts when, Kurt Ilo?
It starts on February 4th and goes all the way through February 8th. So that's next week here in Anchorage at the Dena'ina Center.
And Annie's day one? Or?
Annie begins on day one at our noon keynote. So you get to have a good luncheon and enjoy Annie's talk that day as well.
And I guess you wouldn't mind, Annie, if we sent somebody with a microphone and camera along with you when you went out garbage picking.
Oh, my God, that'd be so fun. Let's all do it together. It's really fun. You know, I tell you, you can learn so much about a society. And I want to remind your listeners, too, if you want to hear more about what our work is doing, please do check our website at storyofstuff.org. And there's a little button that says join our community. If you click there, we'll keep you posted when we make new films and curriculums and study guides and all kinds of fun stuff.
Kathy in Big Lake, you're on the air with Annie Leonard. Kathy in Big Lake. Hi.
Hi. I just wanted to say I watched your film when it first released and thought I was enlightened and found so much information, and it was just so awareness building and caused me really to reflect more than I had about stuff that I needed when I needed new, et cetera. And so I do encourage people, again, to just go online and watch that and the other films. And I also want to say, it's if people are talking about all or nothing, we start at small steps. And, you know, so in our little community in Big Lake, we have people sharing tools, equipment. We have a log splitter that several families use. Not everybody needs their own log splitter in their yard. They come on wheels, or you can put wheels on them. And responding, I think it was Dave from Bethel, that this kind of sharing of tools and the same stuff.
Okay, you're cutting out there, Kathy.
Okay, well, I'm just saying this is the norm among old-time Alaskans. So
amen.
I just encourage people to do that and, you know, box up all the little preemie clothes when your baby has thankfully outgrown them and pass them on to the next family with a new baby, and it all starts with little steps. And then I just want to point people to the Valley Recycling Center, which started with a few dedicated people and has now built an institution that's supported by many people, including surprising legislators who continue to support. So we can do this. We just all have to have the awareness, I think, and the dedication to pursue it. Thank you.
Thank you, Kathy. John and Haynes, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Yeah. Hey, can you hear me?
Yep.
Hey, I really wanted to thank you for the show. I turned it on midship here, and it's been really exciting to me to hear that rhetoric. And I'm originally from Arizona. I moved up here about 15 years ago, and I was about 15 years ago, I read a book. It was called Stuff, and it was from that World Watch.
Right.
Anyhow, it was a great. It's pretty depressing to read it, but it's also an eye opener. You know, for example, you know where aluminum can comes from, the amount of work and energy it takes to have that aluminum can in your hand, and you know, basically you're drinking carbonated sugar water. And then you throw that away and, you know, or you recycle it. And the recycling is just a small part in the return. It's not like you can just make a new can with it. I think any way that we can do this sharing and not have so much stuff is really our future. One thing I noticed, I heard on the radio the other day, they were talking about where they're doing the car sharing in the big cities, in some of these big cities in Europe, and they were actually making it work, and how they were expanding. And I just thought, you know, to wrap my head around that is super challenging, but I think that's what we need to do is wrap our head around it and try to figure out how to make it work.
John, thanks for your call. Yeah.
Hey, the other thing I want to do is I wanted to get that website for the story. I didn't quite get that.
Annie?
Sure. The website is Story of Stuff, just like those three words, storyofstuff.org.
Yeah. Thank you so much. I'm just super excited to hear you guys talk about this.
All right, great. Let's go to Jody in Anchorage. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Jody.
Hi, I just wanted to call and respond to the comment, thankfully, that was made on bottled water. I so appreciate somebody finally speaking some sense about the ridiculous bottled water industry. The thing that really irks me is I'm a 25-year employee of the oil industry, which is frequently generally vilified by the green community. And I never have ever heard up until today somebody basically speaking common sense about this bottled water industry that created this non-necessary industry. We spend resources and money and energy toting this bottled water around the planet and have all the waste associated with it. So I really appreciated those comments.
All right, Jody, thank you very much. Looks like we got time for Kay. Joins the program from Chugiak. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Kay.
Hello. I wanted to tell you about a program we're doing a trial run on out here in Chugiak. The faith community is getting involved in trying to save the planet and save Earth's resources. This program is called Recycle for a Reason, and the reasons, of course, are things you've all talked about there. On two Saturdays a month, the first and the last Saturday of the month, we invite anyone in the community to bring their usable items to the United Methodist Church of Chugiak. We collect them, sort them, and on the second Saturday and Friday, for that matter, of the month, we have them set out in garage sale fashion in our community center at the church. The community is invited to come in, particularly the organizations that help others in the community, like the Senior Center, for that matter, even Doctors Without Borders, Head Start.
Okay, Kay, you got to wrap it up. We're just about out of time.
Okay, they can come in and pick out any of the items they need in their offices or anything their clients need for free.
Thanks. Also, this one from Larry saying, I think someplace north of International Airport, there's a depot for appliances and so forth that is used by Habitat for Humanity. I believe that's true. Annie Leonard, look forward to seeing you.
Me too. Can't wait to get up there.
All right. Kurt Ilo, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having us, Steve.
And thanks to our production crew. I'm Steve Heimel.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network. The Kinnick Arm Crossing will connect Anchorage to the Mat-Su Valley. The bridge is intended to create construction jobs, provide access to land for commercial, industrial, and residential development, and save freight costs for Alaska's interior and North Slope. More information on the Kinnick Arm Bridge at kinnickarmbridge.com. This message sponsored by the Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority.
Increasing energy efficiency is an easy way to reduce energy consumption and save money. The Alaska Housing Finance Corporation now offers financing to publicly owned facilities to make improvements to increase energy efficiency. Find out more about how their loan program works and if there are public buildings in your community that are a good fit for the Alaska Energy Efficiency Revolving Loan Program at ahfc.us. This message sponsored by AHFC.
This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.